Our next presenter, last but not least, is Kristen Litzelman. She's the Cancer Prevention Fellow at the National Cancer Institute and is particularly interested in the psychosocial impacts of illness on patients and their families and how interrelationships among family members impact health outcomes. Kristen, all yours.
We've heard some great talks so far today about the burden of cancer. As you just heard from Kathy, for me, I am particularly interested in the psychosocial ramifications of illness because of the important effects that can have on overall well-being for cancer survivors and their families. So we know that in addition to the burdens of cancer, cancer patients also experience what they consider to be benefits. These are things like positive psychosocial responses, where they feel that they've gotten something out of their disease and they've gotten something good despite all of the burden that they experience. So my collaborators and I were particularly interested in figuring out how the broad sequelae of cancer might influence their experiences with these positive psychological responses to cancer. I have no disclosures, and I actually want to start by thanking my group, especially my co-authors, as well as the entire MAPS Collaborative Working Group, and also the programs that I call home at the National Cancer Institute. So after cancer, there are some various psychological trajectories. After the cancer diagnosis, there's an expected and very common decline in psychological health as people adjust to their illness and their treatment and what it means for the rest of their lives. After that, most people go on to either recover their former level of psychological health or they experience a slight impairment. And then there are some people who continue to decline. They have this negative cycle where they deteriorate. And there's other people who actually find that their psychological health improves after their cancer diagnosis. When we look at how this happens, it's sort of a balance between the resources of the person, the individual, and also the stress and the burden that comes along with their cancer. So from previous research, we know that growth is typically associated with physical factors of the individual and the disease itself, interpersonal factors like age, personality, coping strategies, psychological factors, such as the perceived threat of the disease, and then interpersonal factors, and this is things like social support. And for us, we wanted to extend this work to look at the psychological and functional and economic sequelae of cancer, things that are actually contributed to by the disease, in order to look at how those specifically influence growth. So the core question here is, what are the cancer-related factors, and again, I'm referring to these as sequelae, that are associated with positive psychological responses to cancer? And as a follow-up question, an exploratory analysis looking at how this differs by treatment status, people who are on treatment versus people who are off treatment. So the way that we're thinking about this is sort of summarized in this conceptual model. After the cancer diagnosis, there are several different sequelae that occur. On the psychological level, this can be things like worry about cancer return, their perceived chance of return, economic sequelae like having financial problems or insurance problems specifically due to cancer and its treatment, and then functional sequelae like having activity limitations due to cancer or having had a family caregiver. These are all influenced by the disease itself, the treatment, as well as current factors like their access to care, their health, as well as their sociodemographic characteristics and a number of other things that we're not able to fit in the model. And those in turn can influence their positive psychological responses. This is how we're thinking about this whole analysis. And as with everyone else, we studied cancer survivors from the MAPS 2011 who participated in the Experiences with Cancer survey. We excluded non-melanoma skin cancer survivors, and we also dropped survivors who had missing data on any of the covariates that were in our final analysis. And so that left us with a final sample of 797 cancer survivors. Of those, 128 were currently receiving treatment for cancer when they answered the survey, and 669 were not receiving treatment. So our dependent variable here are these positive psychological responses to cancer. And there were four items that were specifically asked that we used to assess this. So the survey asked, have any of the following been positive things about your experiences with your cancer, its treatment, or the lasting effects of treatment? It has made me a stronger person. I can cope better with life challenges. It became a reason to make positive changes in my life. And it has made me have healthier habits. because of the conceptual differences in these, we treated these as independent factors rather than trying to create a scale, and I'll talk about that a little bit more towards the end. Our independent variables were the various sequelae. The psychological sequelae were worry about the cancer return and perceived chance that the cancer will return or get worse. So specifically in the survey, participants were asked how often they worried that their cancer would come back or get worse, and this we dichotomized into those who said never, rarely, or sometimes, and those who said often or all the time. They were also asked, in your own opinion, what do you think are the chances that your cancer will come back or get worse within the next 10 years? And we, again, categorized this as very low, fairly low, or moderate, fairly high, and very high, and then we left the I don't know group separate. We also looked at the economic sequelae of cancer. So for this, people were asked, we looked at people who had financial problems because of the cancer, and this included things like debt, bankruptcy, making other financial sacrifices, worrying about being able to pay medical bills, or being unable to pay medical bills that were related to their cancer, its treatment, or the lasting effects of treatment. And then we also asked about insurance problems, and we categorized whether or not people had insurance problems based on whether they were refused care or a second opinion, or if they were ever denied coverage because of cancer. And finally, we categorized our functional sequelae. Here, the survey asked participants whether or not the cancer had limited them in the amount or kind of activities they could do, and this is specific to non-work activities, so this is outside of work. And we also asked, the survey also asked whether or not they had a family member who provided care for them during or after their cancer treatment. In addition, we had several covariates. We looked at the cancer factors that were available, including the time since diagnosis, whether or not they were currently receiving treatment, if they were in remission, whether they had had a recurrence, and the type of cancer, which we dichotomized down into breast cancer versus any other type of cancer. We looked at sociodemographic characteristics, including age, race, ethnicity, a number of others, and we also looked at health and healthcare access, which was specifically measured as self-rated mental and physical health, and whether or not they had a usual source of care to measure our access of care. So for our analytic approach, we conducted staged multivariable logistic regression models. The stages were set up such that the first stage looked at psychological, economic, and functional sequelae all together. Then we added in the cancer factors, which was things like time since diagnosis. Then the health factors, so whether or not they had access to care and what their current health was. And finally, the rest of the sociodemographics. When I present my findings, I'm only going to be presenting the final stage that controls for all of those factors for simplicity. We did one model for each of the positive psychological responses, and again, I'll reiterate that our secondary aim was to stratify by treatment status and explore whether or not there were any differences in these relationships for people who were on or not on treatment, and all of the analyses were conducted in SAS using the survey weighting procedures. So just to orient you to the sample, I want to go over a couple of characteristics. The mean age was 63 and a half. More than half were female, and they were predominantly white, non-Hispanic. The mean income was quite high, $70,000 per year, and the mean education was 13.6 years, which is equivalent of some college. So across the board, looking at the positive psychological responses to cancer, around 60 to 70% of participants reported each of these. What's interesting about this is that there's not perfect correlation between these. It's not the same 65% reporting each of the positive psychosocial responses. So when we look at our unweighted kappas, the agreement is somewhere between 38 to 67%. So it's somewhere in the moderate range of agreement. What that means is that not everyone who's reporting one of these psychological responses is also reporting the others. So there are differences. Some people say that they became a stronger person but didn't develop healthier habits, while some people say that they had both. And that's particularly interesting to us. So my multivariable results, I just want to start by orienting you to my slide here. What we're going to be looking at here is the odds ratios, the odds of reporting one of these positive psychological responses for the given sequelae, and I'll go through each of them. This is controlling for all of the covariates that I mentioned earlier, as well as the other sequelae. So keep that in mind as you're looking at the results. And when I pop up the slide here, you're going to see that the odds ratio is represented by a little square marker, and then the confidence interval is going to be a vertical band, just so that we all know what we're looking at. And then, of course, an odds ratio of 1 indicates that there's no difference. So we are looking at this for each of those positive psychological responses along the bottom. And what we see for worrying about cancer is that there's not really much of a difference between people who do and do not report worry for any of our positive psychological responses. Worrying about cancer does not seem to be associated with whether or not people feel that they're a stronger person, that they cope better, that they have positive changes in their lives, or that they have healthier habits. We actually see something very similar for a perceived chance of return. People who thought they had a high chance of return were no different, for the most part, than people who perceived a low chance of return in terms of these positive psychological responses. And you can see that for coping better, that does seem to be a difference there, but because the line crosses one, it's not statistically significant, and it's not actually significant in any of the stages, so it seems to be that there's quite a bit of noise there, and it would be interesting to see what that looks like in a larger sample. When we look at the economic sequelae, however, we start seeing something a little bit different. In particular, we can see that people who reported having financial problems were actually more likely to report that they were a stronger person because of their cancer. That's an odds ratio of approximately 1.7, and that is statistically significant. When we look at some of the others, we see that they are close to being statistically significant. They're not quite there. This one in particular, positive changes, was significant earlier in the earlier stages of the model. Once we started controlling for the sociodemographic characteristics, that's what made that confidence interval cross that line. So it's a little bit hard to say whether we're seeing some confounding there or if we're seeing a real association. And for insurance problems, we're seeing something similar. We see a trend that people who reported insurance problems seem to have a higher likelihood of reporting these positive psychological responses, but again, not statistically significant in that group. And finally, we have our functional sequelae. For having activity limitations, non-work activity limitations due to the cancer, we don't seem to be seeing a whole lot going on there. But when we look at who had a family caregiver, people who did report having a family caregiver during or after their treatment were more likely to report that they had positive psychological responses to cancer for coping better, making positive changes in their lives, and having healthier habits. And for healthier habits in particular, this is something that we hear about in other parts of the literature. If you incorporate the family into behavior change for improving health, that seems to work better than just trying to have it work for one person alone. So it's possible that having a family caregiver facilitated that in some way. So how does this differ by treatment status? So I want to reiterate the sample sizes that we're working with here. We had 128 people who were currently receiving treatment at the time of the survey, and the remainder were not. And so our currently receiving treatment group is small, so please keep that in mind as you're looking at these results. But we do see some interesting trends in differences and similarities that are worth noting. When we look at worry about cancer return, we see that people who were on treatment had borderline statistically significant lower odds of reporting being a stronger person or making positive changes in their lives. People who were off treatment, however, we saw null or actually statistically significant increase in odds of reporting positive changes. And so this seems to be a very important difference. People who are on treatment and worrying are worse off in terms of their positive psychological responses, whereas people who are off treatment seem to, it's possible that the amount of time that has passed has facilitated that for them. Perceived chance of return, we see that people who are off treatment, they actually report having more healthier habits. If when they have a higher perceived chance of return, but we don't see that at all in people who are on treatment. And for insurance problems, whereas in the whole group we saw that more insurance problems was sort of borderline associated with being more likely to report some of these positive psychological responses, we actually see when we split it up that there's a statistically significant negative association for people who are on treatment, but a statistically significant positive association for people who are off treatment. So we're seeing very different results here. There are some similarities, though, that are also quite interesting. Financial problems across the board, the trend was that they were associated with greater odds of positive psychological responses. Not all of these were statistically significant, but the fact that it was consistent for those on and off treatment was particularly interesting. And when the directionality was consistent for those on and off treatment, the effect tended to be larger in those who were currently receiving treatment. So it seems that some of that may dissipate a bit as people get further away from their treatment. And again, this is controlling for all of those covariates that I mentioned at the beginning. So one of the things that you should keep in mind as you're thinking about those is that when we're looking at these differences in particular, these are different people. This is cross-sectional. So it would be really fascinating to be able to look at this over time and see how that trajectory changes as people move through their cancer diagnosis and survivorship experience. We also aren't able to tease out whether what we're looking at here is a real effect or if it's proxies for other factors. And so an example here would be when you look at people who have financial problems or who have caregivers, is that real? Is there something going on there that's a direct effect, or is that actually a proxy for severity of disease that we're not able to capture in our analyses with this data set? But what I think we're seeing here are some very interesting trends, and the real message is that even though cancer influences a lot of areas of a survivor's life, that could potentially also contribute to their ability to find good, something good come out of their negative experience. So even negative sequelae, like having those financial problems, could potentially be something to facilitate some of these positive responses. So it's possible that there's some sort of role of adversity in the development of these positive responses that I'd like to explore further. It's also possible that family caregiving could be indicative of something like social support or severity of disease, and unfortunately we didn't have enough to be able to tease that out of this data set, but it would be something fascinating to explore going forward. There are also potential differences during and after treatment. We saw some interesting trends, and following this up in a longitudinal survey, as I mentioned, would really help to open up this analysis and figure out what's really going on there, see if there is, in fact, a difference in how people report these responses over time. And finally, there are those differences in the positive psychological responses. And so in a clinical setting or in a social work setting, if you know that someone reports that they feel like they're a stronger person because of their disease, that doesn't necessarily mean that they are developing those healthier habits that are going to help them prevent recurrence or prevent other diseases or late effects in the future. And so that's an important factor to keep in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. So we still have plenty of time for questions. So if you have a question, please raise your hand. And when you ask your question, introduce yourself and tell us what your affiliation was, and then tell us your question, and then we'll have the appropriate person come to the mic and respond. So questions? Yes.
That's a good question. I will say that I did not with these data, although we were doing some preliminary analyses with the Livestrong data, which is the same survey, just a much larger sample, and we did do that. We did look at multiple cancers. I think there's some concern about how well people can report a recurrence, because if it's in a different site, it may simply be a second primary, so we just grouped all of them together. But those who did have more than one cancer were much more likely to report financial problems and have like higher rates of bankruptcy and medical debt and things like that. So that's what I can say. I don't know. Does anyone else want to? Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the dilemma with some of these studies, is you really need a large sample to be able to evaluate multiple cancers.
Yeah. Do we have any other questions? Yes. Please introduce yourself first. That's okay. Well, see, that's part of the problem with the data. I have characteristics as reported by the, there's two points to it. So first, for the insurance side. So for the access, the majority are married, and the majority ever had insurance. It doesn't mean they currently have insurance, but at some point since their diagnosis, they had insurance. So I have a companion study that's not using the experiences with cancer survey per se. It's using some of the earlier data, and I'm following insurance through time, looking at insurance trajectories and trying to see what causes what or what predicts people to go on and off. off insurance over time. And so I think that probably the results of that study, which I'm hoping to publish shortly, I have the paper almost done, probably addresses more what you're after, I think, than the results from the experiences of cancer survey, because it's really just, it's based on whether they ever had insurance since diagnosis.
Yeah, so I just want to add one comment to that, which is in many states, if someone is diagnosed with cancer, they can get presumptive eligibility for Medicaid. And so that's another reason that makes it really difficult to evaluate this ever insurance, particularly for breast and cervical cancer. If someone is uninsured, they can, in some states or some, and I know in the District of Columbia, for example, the early breast and cervical cancer early detection program would send someone without insurance recently diagnosed with breast or cervical cancer to get screened, even though they'd already been screened, so they could then enroll into the early detection program. So it makes looking at health insurance really complicated. So.
And then the enrollment becomes retroactive.
Exactly.
Because they've been screened and then it gets paid for after the fact.
Exactly.
So,
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So I know you don't have data. Oh, sorry, Heather Orr, University of Buffalo. And I'm wondering if in your Livestrong data, we'd be able to tease apart financial burden by cancers. Are there some problems?
Do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, we. Yeah. Preliminary data that we didn't present here, right? So. We did look a little bit by cancer site, and you do see, as you might expect, for cancers where people are more likely to be diagnosed with later stage disease, you do see a little bit more financial burden. So breast cancer, not so much, colorectal cancer more, but unfortunately, even with the sample of about 6,000, you run into small sample sizes very quickly. So, but it's a really good point that you would expect to see differences by cancer type.
So I included all cancer types except for the non-melanomas like many others, but that was one limitation that I mentioned with survey data is it tends to not include the more aggressive short-term survival cancers. So it's not that I purposely excluded them, it's just that there may not be, we may not have as many of them in the data.
Go ahead. I guess it's your question.
So we do want to look a little bit more at time since diagnosis. In this initial analysis, we just are comparing cancer survivors versus people without a history of cancer. But that is something that I think we would follow up on to see whether now. In this sample, there already are survivors too, so actually determining those cut points is going to be critical, but it's definitely something worth looking at. Further.
Yes?
I have a question for Gary. Very interesting study. Thanks for doing it.
And your name?
I'm sorry, Tim Jordan, Center for Health and Successful Living at the University of Toledo.
Thank you.
Less access to services and their utilization of the library was less.
think there's many. I think there's many factors that lead to reduced access to care, to breast cancer screening, or really any preventive measure. I mean, transportation, cost sharing in general. I haven't really looked at it more, like in more detail, and I think it's definitely something that's worth looking at. No, I mean there is a lot of data in the maps that we could look at, you know, some of the financial burden measures, but it's not something that I've looked at or at least yet.
Questions? Yes. Good. There was another question over here. Yes.
I'm Pragati Irmani. I'm actually a current doctoral student at UT School of Public Health. But this is following on with that. We did a recent study with the breast cancer survivors, and we found that type of treatment, especially, also is one of the factors which determines outcomes for breast cancer survivors. We did this with MD Anderson patients. So, did you find something like that? Because what we found is that endocrine treatment, patients have to come again and again to get their
So I was just looking at screening, and I think the important thing I should probably point out is, so for breast cancer screening, I excluded individuals with a history of breast cancer, and you know, given the screen recommendations would be different for that population, and similarly for cervical cancer and colorectal cancer, just because of the differences in you know, surveillance moving forward.
Yes. Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you very much, and thank you to our panel.